Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
I'm Warren Bernard.
And we're going to be taking a look at some iconic issues of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams run. But first, Jimmy, what do you have?
I have patreon.com/JimRugg, where I post a lot of my out-of-print comics, mini-comics, and zines. And this is my most recent post. This is a catalog from my ballpoint pen art show from a few years ago. Did a small print run. It's long gone. Now you can download the high-res PDF of this and see all of these drawings, a lot of them influenced by comics, obviously, my number one love. But this is what I post on my Patreon, along with a lot of original art, a lot of process stuff, street angel art, things of that nature. So if you dig what we do here, you'll find a lot more of it at patreon.com/JimRugg, the Bible verse from Pulp Fiction.
You're telling on yourself with that Walrus Man piece, man, because that lets us know your age. Red Room issue 1 coming out this May. It's going to be in stores in just essentially a couple of weeks, which is crazy to me, man. The pre-orders are due on April 20th, so that may or may not be in the very near future, depending on when this video goes live. But tens of thousands of people put in their pre-order through their stores and through the Fantagraphics website. You could do so as well. And it's important that we know how many of these things to print when that time comes. There are several flavors of the comic. Here's the Eddie P. variant. There's the Jim Rugg variant by way of Dan Klaus, Nate Ball issue 1, Peach Momoko. And there's a store in Baltimore that runs about 5 different locations called Third Eye Comics. This is their store exclusive. There's three other store exclusives that are forthcoming, man. So a lot of versions of Red Room issue number 1 that are going to be out there. Get it put on your pull list because it will be coming out monthly after May. Warren, do you have some plugs?
Nope, none today.
You graced us with your comic collection this week, and these are your original copies of the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series. You got them as they were coming out?
Yes, I went up to the newsstand and pulled them off the spinner racks when I was, I think I was 14, when the first one came out, and then of course when the last ones came out, I turned 15. So this is, I think, April of 1970.
So this will be a kind of a macro episode where we just kind of like look through a bunch. Like Jimmy and I, we don't have these comics, you know what I mean? So I think it'll be cool to just kind of like give a quick breeze through all of them. I do wonder, did you just like on a whim pick these up? Did you hear that this Neil Adams guy was interesting and you were following him?
Like, you know, I forgot exactly how it happened, but when they did come out, this was a sharp turn when it came to Green Lantern in terms of what the older covers looked like. And you know, we knew about Neil Adams because of Batman I think it was Dead Man that was first,
right? Yeah.
So but when I was up there, it was like, well, you know, wow, what's this? I don't know if I read about it in an earlier comic book from the DC line, but I started pulling them off the newsstand, and, you know, to a 14-year-old, actually to anybody, these were really different because of what it was that they were trying to do with the storylines.
The art style was something to speak of as well. Like, when you have your Murphy Anderson Hawkmans and stuff that's pretty rigid and stiff and, looks almost like clip art. And you start to get into the Neil Adams kind of storytelling, drastically different
than
average kind of comics.
Neil Adams, of course, coming from a very solid commercial art background, illustration background, something that a lot of cartoonists may have aspired to, comic book artists may have aspired to at the time, but he had already done it and was bringing a lot of that to the comic book page. The other thing with Neil Adams is he gets into comics when comics are sort of sloping downwards. And he's like the only guy of his age, give or take 5 years, that comes into comics then, which is kind of interesting because it is this revolutionary style.
And look at this, man. It would take a young guy to do like a kind of contemporary design like this.
The other thing is big influence on a generation later, Bill Sienkiewicz, who, you know, you point out a page like this, Ed, it's exactly where the first place my mind goes is thinking of these other artists that kind of think this way and work this way.
Now, we need to say something about the storyline, too, because the storyline is Green Lantern is set up as the man. Green Lantern is set up as society. It is set up as, you know, policing. It is set up as
status quo,
all of those things. And Green Arrow is brought along to try to educate Green Lantern on race, indigenous people, all of these things that were really hitting at that time, environmental stuff, all of this stuff comes out in this. And so this was, It went even beyond what...
It's unbelievable, that cover.
There's two crucifixion covers.
Yes, two crucifixion covers. And also notice he's crucified upon a native, you know, an indigenous totem pole.
Well, also notice Green Arrow's headdress.
Yeah, so...
There's a lot happening on this one.
And so the
kind of poppy colors are a little bit circus-like, though.
Right, and people have to remember that all of these issues were hitting the newspapers of that time. And so this was the only comic at that point, for better or for worse, that decided to go ahead and try to make some kind of a statement about what it was that was going on in America in terms of politics, in terms of society. So that's what made these so different, you know, besides someone like Neil Adams doing Green Lantern, because up until that point, the Green Lantern was this very, you know, Gil Kane, very precise, more precise way of drawing. And this came along, and it was very different. And they brought in the Lantern Corps because they were part of the education process of what O'Neill and company were trying to communicate at the time.
These are Bleeding Edge comics, and the thing about Bleeding Edge is you get cut a little bit, man. So when you say for better or worse, like that is very appropriate for this stuff because it's very heavy-handed.
There are the preachy times in this were almost cringing. Now, mind you, to a 14 or 15 year old, it was very different. But reading it today, you know, I was reading some last night, and I was like, oh my God, this dialogue is like, you've got to be kidding me. But and that almost overwhelmed the point they were trying to make.
We talk about that a lot, where different creators will sort of push the boundaries of comics. They'll fight to have the ability to do something that's relevant to headlines, you know, something that maybe isn't aimed at a 7-year-old.
Right.
But they don't necessarily have the vocabulary yet. You know, it's almost like the concept is what they've got to kick the door down to get through. And then they've spent their whole life writing kids comics, you know, so you end up with this heavy-handed style. It happens throughout comics history. You can see it where these guys that push the boundaries, they maybe go a little bit too far in terms of what they're capable of because they're so eager to expand this vocabulary. Big guys like, I mean, I could say guys like Will Eisner and Frank Miller. I feel like you see these guys really open some doors to what we can do, you know, in genre storytelling or in graphic novels or, you know, aiming higher, but they may not be the ones who take fullest advantage of that.
Yes. Now, and this one in particular, this really struck me, I remember, on the newsstand, because here, and I can't remember another cover like this, where it was a skewed view of a newspaper. This is not, this is trying to be something else. It's not trying to be a superhero cover to emphasize what it was that the storyline was doing, of the trial of... You know, all three of these in front of humanity. All right,
it's no Adams being a real graphic designer and bringing those tools into
commercial art.
Yeah, so you just duotone here, several different typefaces.
Yeah, exactly. Like
this reminds me so much of a Brian Bolan too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There was a Batman cover too.
So these covers were also, to me,
amazing cover.
Yeah, were very unlike what you were seeing in the typical comics on the newsstand at that point. So there was both this visual aspect to it, along with these series of storylines, as preachy as they were, that were covering these topics that really had never been covered in comics before to any great degree.
Population explosion. Yeah. Like
so many people everywhere. Cool page layouts.
Oh yeah, these are and they're still they're still highly readable. Not every page is preachy, but also I love the drawing. I love the art in these. They were very, like I said, very different. You know, like these.
That's a great spread. Yeah. Really like seeing those.
Yeah. So there was this whole other thing going on out there. Now, what was it? I guess in the 90s they released all of these in a boxed set. So okay. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
No.
So there's a really nice boxed set of these in a slipcase edition.
Wow. Yeah, but it's new coloring and stuff. Like you want these if you could get
them.
Right,
yes. Yeah. And by the way, these aren't that rare. You know, a lot of these comics are not, you know. Now, of course, rarity and how much money they're going for are two different things. But they're readily available. It shouldn't be any difficulty to pull together.
It's funny. As soon as you say that, I speculate on, okay, why is that? Well, it's an older, probably this appealed to older readers who were then taking care of them.
Yeah.
So now you can find them. You know, there's some out there.
Right.
Is this a one for me, one for you kind of comic where it's like, we got to get some crazy stuff in there. Like we've been telling you guys about population explosions for a while. Like, let's do some tongue-in-cheek superhero stuff.
Yeah, part of this is to go ahead and make Green Lantern aware of the power that he's got and what is he going to do with that power.
It's funny how relevant a lot of these concepts are today. You know what I mean? Like conceptually, right? Having one guy that's the square and one guy who's the reformist kind, or, you know,
yes,
trying to influence each other's ideology.
Now, this cover I wanted to stop at just for a second, because here it is. This guy's over here saying, "Never again will superheroes interfere with our orderly world, destroy them." And for those people that don't know, this is the face here is the face of Vice President Spyro T. Agnew. And he was the one that would go out, and he was basically, Nixon was a hatchet man enough, but he was the one that went out to the police unions and stuff like that to say how much they're into law and order. He was the one that went out and denounced the press, okay, as an effete core of impudent snobs that characterize themselves as intellectuals. So he was the hitman. That's right. He also called them the nattering nabobs of negativism. And he was the hitman, so this was purposeful on their point, their part, to go ahead and put him on the cover,
right,
in this kind of a position. Yeah, well, you know, I should know who that is, but I don't remember. I'll have to go find that.
These both of these recent covers show off that Neil Adams commercial art,
yes,
thing. You know, the idea of like political or editorial cartooning to put a vice president's likeness on the cover.
We're going to see more and more. Like, this, yes, is kind of like an exploitation.
Totally.
Cover for a paperback cover in a way, except in a illustrated form. But we'll see.
Very
like,
much.
Well, like this one right here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So this is where Green Arrow finds out that Speedy is a junkie. And at that time, even today, although it's kind of moved, there was nothing lower. The only thing lower than a junkie was the person who supplied the junk to them. And that's what this whole story was about. But it was also about why people become junkies. And one of the things that they point out in here, and this is echoed in the OxyContin crisis that we've got today, is that when you're hopeless and society is against you and there's nothing there for you, why wouldn't you do this to feel better? Because your surroundings, the society, everything is pointing in this direction that you don't mean anything, you're not going to advance anywhere. And that was one of the points that was made in this two-part series. And I love this. More deadly than the atom bomb. And one other thing here. Notice up here, an important message from the Honorable John V. Lindsay, Mayor of New York City. So in the back, here we go. An important message for you. So here's the mayor of New York, John Lindsay, writing some guy at DC Comics, commending them. Your undertaking to impart the horrors of narcotics to our youngsters deserves applause. With the drug epidemic spreading throughout the country, the need for effective campaigns of prevention is ever increasing. Now, whether this is an effective campaign is left for other people to determine.
Yeah.
But this gives you the visibility that this had at the time.
Interesting to see, like, the war against drugs. I mean, that's got to be one of the early uses of that phrase.
Yes. I think that comes from Nixon, right?
Right, yeah. It was during the Nixon administration that marijuana was put on the same schedule as cocaine and heroin. Right? Not because it deserved to be there, but because they viewed that as part of this counterculture revolt.
I love these top parts. The shocking truth about drugs. Very EC Comics, like Ed. You mentioned the exploitation style,
but also the magazines of the day, the lower class magazines. Okay.
Do you know anything about this winner of Academy Award for Best Comic?
No, I do not.
I think that's a little kayfabe, man.
That's strange.
Banned in five countries.
So you can see all the different people. The different races.
Every economic stratum is hooked on the Heron.
Well, right, Heron, and also, all of the different races that are here in the United States. And their treatment of race is, and I'll be honest with you, if you read through, if someone born in 1995 reads this, they're going to be horrified at what they see. If someone like me, who was 15 at the time, reading it, okay, or anybody reading it at the time, that's the way things were, all right? Like they use the N-word in here. Today, no one would ever think of putting the N-word in a comic, but it is in here. At that time, in literature, it wasn't the epithet, well, I'm sorry, the absolute banned word that it is today. For better or for worse, I'm not making a value judgment on that, but that's just the way it was.
Context,
right, exactly. It's and like I said, someone 25 today reads this, they're going to be horrified. So
there's a Joe Kubert energy to some of these faces here.
It's actually, this is Norman Rockwell. All right, he did, I forgot, in the early 60s or late 50s, he did a I think it was a cover for either Look or Saturday Evening Post, that it was all of the faces of all of the races of on Earth on one big thing. So this is actually stolen from Norman Rockwell.
So we covered Population Explosion, My Native American Brothers, we got the junkie stuff. What else do we have here, man?
Well, this is getting to the end of the run.
Yeah.
And so here, for the first time, a black man becomes a Green Lantern. Because when you read the Green Lantern, everybody was either an alien or white. And so the other Earth races were kind of pushed to the side.
I have a coverless copy of this comic.
We got to go through that at some point, man.
And then, of course, your second Jesus Christ cover.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Talk about heavy-handed.
Oh, yeah, no, it was, are you people crazy? He's trying to save us all. Stop, you know what you're doing.
And what is he saving? Like, is it fuel consumption?
This is after the creators have gotten on the heroin.
and it's
we're,
great.
We're joking.
And through him, save a world. Well, I don't know about you, but this is going to be kind of weird to read this in a comic book. So, and then after that, oh, go ahead.
I'm saying, like, what the heck, what are we preaching in this one? I just don't understand.
I didn't reread this one.
I'm seeing a lot of environmental stuff. That would be great if this was, like, the next page in the comic.
It would be.
Greetings, I am Isaac, and...
You fucking long-haired hippie.
And that's what they were considered back then.
Attaching yourself to airplanes. These are those new Adams colors that he brought to comics, man, using different mixtures.
And this is your pre-digital stuff, and whenever you're printing on this newsprint with, just these cheapest printing you can get, and you can see how that's an uneven color.
You could feel
it. It looks
it.
Really cool. If you do that now digitally, it's the flattest color there is on Earth.
Right.
Like a piece of plastic. That's pretty impressive. That coloring, that whole page is... Pretty amazing.
Yeah, so what you may want to do is I'd pick one or two of these and go through just to give people a sense of how socially conscious comics looked back then, and then maybe do one or two that were done today and do kind of a compare and contrast.
So even Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill, man, they couldn't save this comic, right?
They couldn't save this, no.
So this is it, and it's going to be a backup. Neil Adams is going to get to be a B-lister.
And worth saying a little bit about Denny O'Neill and his contribution to comics. Like, that guy for decades was producing some of the most interesting comics to come out of Marvel and DC. Often as an editor, but, a pretty influential guy in comics history.
This is good context, man. So this is the journeyman artwork for DC Comics, like, at this time. You know? Functional.
Yeah.
It's all there. You know? Gets the job done.
And by the way, this is exactly why I stopped reading The Flash, because I was a huge Carmen Infantino fan. And there was nothing better to me than Infantino and John Broome doing The Flash. And then when they started doing this stuff, I was like, I'm out.
So do you know who this is?
Irv Novak.
Okay. Novak, yeah.
So you burn this into your mind, and then you flip the script and you go here.
Yeah, it's a
different spectrum.
What an amazing
look
sequence.
At that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, again, Marvel, DC have house styles, and then someone like a Neil Adams shows up with his own style, and it just pops.
Yeah.
Wild shit. Warren, thank you so much for bringing these
comics
by,
man. Yeah, these are great
to
see.
So this is the macro view of the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Green Lantern, Green Arrow run. There will be future episodes where we actually crack one of these open and... you know, deal with the heavy-handed message, man. We get schooled, Jim. We're going to get schooled on the perils of heroin abuse and whatnot.
It does make me wonder, like, when's the last time they reprinted these things? Will they ever reprint these again?
Yeah. The questions that we ponder on Cartoonist Kayfabe. Yes. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy, what do you have?
I have patreon.com/JimRug, where you can find my out-of-print zines and mini-comics, lots of my original art process behind-the-scenes artwork. That's at patreon.com/JimRug.
Once again, got to thank Warren Bernard for bringing his great collection here. Red Room Issue 1 is going to be coming out in May 2021. It's going to start coming out on a monthly basis. Get it put on your pull list at your local comic shop. If you don't have a good comic shop in your area, pre-order it through Fantagraphics. If you're a kayfaber from across the pond, check your local shop, or even eBay has good prices that don't have the crazy shipping that we must charge to get it to your country. So check out those different venues. You'll be able to get the comic at an affordable price.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have coming up in 2021. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, given one less than a marching orders, we're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.